out of life.
Yeah.
But he just called a few minutes ago, and he's talking about basically the same things that you are. And so what Robert and I were talking about was basically anxiety. That he gets himself into a state of anxiety, and then he doesn't like being in that state of anxiety, which just makes it worse.
Yeah.
Why? Because anxiety comes from not liking things.
Yeah.
That we feel afraid, like something's going to happen or whatever. And so we give ourselves anxiety, and then we don't like the anxiety, but the not liking remains the same. We just change the object.
Yeah.
And so what we can do instead is begin to make friends with this anxiety. That in fact, the anxiety is a useful tool. It's kept you alive.
Well, my anxiety, one way it manifests is I mentally pre-prepare everything constantly. Like mentally, oh, if X happens, then I'll do Y. But if Z happens, then I'll do A, B, and C. But then if D happens, and it's just constantly guessing at everything that could possibly maybe happen and preparing for it mentally. But it doesn't, it's not helpful.
I've got to go take care of the puppy. Hang on, I'll be right back.
It's not helpful.
No, you say.
It makes me more anxious, and it actually impedes my ability to deal with things in the moment because I've pre-rehearsed everything so much, and then life doesn't follow my script.
All right. So we were talking a bit about anxiety in the sense that it is useful. Fear has kept you and you and me alive. It's a natural instinct. If we were completely fearless, we would already been killed. We'd walked in front of a car, fell down an elevator shaft. We'd have been belligerent to some cop and got killed. I mean, there's just all kinds of ways that we would have already been dead, except that we prevented ourselves from doing something stupid. Because we're afraid to do it. So, isn't that marvelous that the fear mechanism still works? We have to keep that. But we can make friends with it. We can give it its due and recognize, yes, I need the fear. And fear has a value to it. Otherwise, I wouldn't do some of the things that it would be really remarkably better if they were done rather than not done. And so if we can recognize that the anxiety and the fears are a natural part of being alive, then whenever we feel afraid, we can say, thank you. Thank you for pointing something out to me that maybe I didn't see myself, because the fear uses, let us say, a different processing system. But some of the psychologists call it fast thought versus slow thought. And so wisdom is slow. Reactions are fast. And anxiety is often a reaction. But when we see the fear, we can then, or the anxiety, then we can just look around and recognize, actually, this is a false positive. There is nothing to be afraid of. Thank you very much for the alert. But I don't have to do anything right now. Now, that's the first thing that we can do when fear comes up. Is, oh, yeah, there's some fear there. So what? And the best way to deal with that when the first time as it arises, just take a deep breath. That almost always, one deep breath is enough to push the fear away if you catch it really soon. The question then becomes, well, how many breaths does it take to catch it? The answer to that is, how long did it take to build up The more it builds up, the more deep breathing we will need to do. But generally, it's going to be less than 5 or 6, maybe as most as 10 breaths. And when we're breathing, we can breathe in deeply and play with the anxiety in the sense of, how does deep breathing deal with or touch anxiety? Where is the anxiety? Can I actually watch that part while watching that area fill with air? What they say, the psychologist will say, breathe into it. But the way that we actually physically do that is by putting our attention or our mindfulness on the anxiety itself, find out where it is, where it's located, and then breathe into it, watching to see if it's going to make any changes. To see if we can, in fact, with the breathing, start making the anxiety change. It can modify, it can move. Then, when you get some more skilled, if it's already quite large and you can't just breathe it out immediately, then the next breath or two, you can look at it. Can you move it around? Can you make it go up when you breathe in and down when you breathe out? Can you make it go lower in the belly or higher? And by the time you've gotten it done that way, because we're playing with it, we've already stopped all of the kind of thoughts that give adrenaline the cue to start up. And so we're no longer adding new adrenaline to the system when we're looking at the effects of the adrenaline that's already in there. And as we're breathing in and out well, that helps the blood system to break up those adrenaline molecules into more basic amino acids so that they can be breathed out with our out-breath. This is why the breathing is so useful, so valuable, and we've known it for centuries. To take a deep breath and to watch what happens, and on the out-breath, let it go and relax. Everything is easy then. Even if the anxiety is still there, it's not nearly as much as it was when we first noticed it. And it becomes a friend, and you say, thank you, friend, for coming by again. And as you go away, I say, bye-bye. See you later. Then everything becomes easy. But we, in this, there is the change of the attitude of the winner. You can do this. Once you experience the getting rid of the anxiety one time, it's almost like a revelation. Well, I can do it. Because we've been told our whole lives that that we're having a panic attack and there's nothing that we can do with that panic attack except just put up with it. But in fact, if we don't like the panic when it's attacking, then we resist it. We get stabbed because we're putting up a defense. But that's in fact one of the things that the Buddha teaches is about that some of the hindrances, some of the things that we have, we welcome, we relish, we want them. And then other things we resist, we put up with, okay? So gain, we welcome that, but loss, we resist it. I used to have it, and poor me, I don't have it anymore. I was okay with it, but now I've lost it. And we go around with a sense of loss about all kinds of things because we're losing all kinds of things all the time. Anicca, vata, sankhara, everything is up and down. And so we're going to be caught in this cycle of gain and loss and gain and loss. An example of that is that when someone really attaches to a political party, and then on election night, and they're going through the results, and that guy won, and this guy lost, This guy won, and here we go. Gain, loss, gain, loss, gain, loss, gain, loss. We're almost exhausted at the end of the outcome of the election, and we still don't know what the future is going to be. But we were stuck in that heck of gain, loss. I like this one. I don't like that one. And so we're pulling and pushing, recognizing when you do have anxiety, it's because you've been pushing, resisting something. And now that you see the anxiety and the panic, you want to resist it too. But the resistance is still there. The same thing is with status and disgrace. That status is something that we have in society, and we don't like to be disgraced. And so when someone gets angry at us, they want to be in the position of gaining status and putting you or their opponent in a state of disgrace. One up, one down in a social setting. And so the way to help with that in that situation, as you and I have been talking about, Robert, is just to let the other guy feel like he's winning. You got me on that one, and let him smirk. Okay, be willing to give them a crumb. Let them feel good so that they will stop the war. So long as you keep resisting them, they'll keep fighting just like you do. And so the next one is a more basic thing, and that is praise and criticism. That we like praise, and yet we don't like criticism. Now, criticism normally and praise is something that happens to a child. So when it's different than status and disgrace. Praise and criticism are deeper, more basic things. And when we were little kids, we got criticized a lot. Every child gets criticized a lot. Otherwise, we would remain the barbarian, happy people that we were born. But we were criticized out of it. And we crave being praised, and we hate criticism. And yet all the rules that we have learned have to do with what we're doing wrong. You've got to get better so that you can be praised. And so we wind up being in a state of self-criticism a lot. That in fact, it's the self-criticism that will often bring up the anxiety and the panic. And so what we can do instead then, this is much more basic, which means that we can take this and put it into seclusion and actually practice praising ourselves, because that's what we're craving anyway. So that if we praise ourselves and give ourselves enough praise, then we won't go out in society longing to get it from someplace else.
But when I praise myself, it feels fake.
Can you adjust your camera just a little bit? I can see the top of your head. Yeah, there you go.
When I praise myself, it feels fake.
Well, it doesn't feel fake. It doesn't feel fake. The praise feels good. What you don't like is because it goes against your rules. And so there's an intermediate step. You praise, and then something in the mechanism says you're not supposed to praise, you're supposed to criticize. And then you criticize, and then you feel bad. That praise itself, you will feel good because you long for that, you want it. And you need to praise yourself and nourish yourself. This is what we were talking about last time. Is start to praise and nourish yourself on the inside. And as soon as you do that, you immediately change it to criticism. And criticize yourself instead. That you're not supposed to feel praise. You don't deserve it or something. These are just a set of rules that you keep repeating to yourself. Instead of actually feeling like you're okay. Because when you do praise yourself, when you do nurture yourself, you like it. No doubt about it. Everyone likes to be nurtured. Everyone likes it. And in fact, that's the basic problem of human existence, is we're all craving nurturing that we got when we were infants. And then it stopped. And criticism time came in at about the age of 4 to 6 or 7. And we've been wholesale, long-term criticizing ourselves ever since. So a lot of students, they do their math homework because they're criticized if they don't do it, instead of enjoying doing the math. If you actually like doing the math, then it's fun. But if you do the math because you are trying to avoid criticism, then it's not fun, and you lose. Whether you learn, in fact, you probably don't even learn any math beyond just enough to take the exam. You don't fall in love with it. Yes, Robert.
I feel like we also have to enjoy the math for the right reasons. Like, if we enjoy the math, but we enjoy it in like a sort of a sadistic way where there's like ill will baked into the enjoyment, then
how could that be? Like, I don't understand. Even if you're at the blackboard because the teacher's called you up to the front to do long division without doing any of the numbers, that you just take the numerator and denominator and come up with the result without all those little numbers before. I know I had to do that in the eighth grade. And I enjoyed the heck out of it, knowing that a lot of the students were jealous.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, you enjoy it because you're winning. Like for me, like...
Yeah, go ahead and win. Yeah. Let yourself be a winner.
You can find sadistic enjoyment in things, but that's...
Why is this sadistic? Because you're not hurting other people when you win. It's when you're causing them to lose.
You are hurting them, yeah. They feel bad because they're not winning, and they see you winning, they get jealous. It's kind of... I know I'm like...
But that's something that they're doing. It's not something that you are doing.
That's true.
Okay. In other words, you're having trouble disassociating yourself and figuring out who is you and who is not you, which is a problem that we all have. We can't tell the difference between who pulled the trigger and who got shot. Okay, so if you are enjoying what you're doing, go ahead and enjoy it. And if you run across someone who is, in fact, hating you because you can do something that they can't do, then you can happily show them how to do it. You can show them the trick. You can show them where the rocks are.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, we're not enjoying the maths in a competitive way. We're enjoying it for the sake of doing the maths. Like, we're not enjoying the maths because we're the best at maths and we want to get, like, an A or whatever. So other people suck, but because we want to get an A for ourselves, like within, you know what I mean? Like, there's like a different mindset, I guess. And I feel like I can enjoy, like I can enjoy a confrontation with someone, but not normally. But if my brain becomes twisted enough, and I feel like bad enough in my head, like I can actually enjoy that, but it's in a nasty way. I'm enjoying causing someone pain. It's quite a sadistic way, but I feel like a lot of people are on that, and that's why they enjoy making enemies so much, because they're on some sadism shit,
right? So we're out there intentionally hurting people with the skills that we've developed.
But
I'm talking about when we were developing those skills, we were only able to develop the skills because there was some attention due to enjoyment. The children who are doing their homework and they're not enjoying their homework, they're not really learning very much. They're just doing it because they want to avoid being criticized. So if you can enjoy doing the homework, that's great. Then enjoy doing the math, that's great. But then later, you can use that skill to hurt someone, like you're saying, if that's your intention. But if your intention is to harm someone, you're just going to pick up whatever skill that you've got laying around to hurt them with it. In this case, it's math.
Yeah, like sometimes I feel like I enjoy something in a way like I'm like, even within myself, like I'm enjoying something and I'm like, ha, take that, Mara. Like, take that unwholesome thoughts, take that unwholesome behavioral patterns. Like, I'm sticking it to them. But even that's got a bit of ill will. It's me against me, or all the parts of me that I don't like, rather than what you were talking about before, which was I'm playing with them, you know. We're all winners. Everyone's coming up.
Okay. All right. Let us talk about it in the sense of relative terms. That, yes, we can say that that's a gray area, but it is very, very light gray. It's mostly wholesome. It's a whole lot more wholesome than it could be. Right. And so that's the whole point of the practice, is we're going in the right direction towards purity. But we don't have to then criticize it. We can just, you know, congratulate ourselves for, wow, this is a much more wholesome thought than otherwise, that I can change it. And the first thing that we're going to start doing with this is learning to make friends with ourselves. This is something that is talked about in, you know, the highest quality of whatever art. This is what the teaching of the Dalai Lama is. Happiness and friendship. That in fact he's got a bumper sticker, so they say, and that is that he says, kindness is my religion.
I love that.
You heard that?
Yeah.
Kindness, okay. And so learning to be kind with ourselves, learning to be nurturing, learning to praise ourselves rather than condemn ourselves. Because if you can learn to praise yourself, then you can learn to praise other people. And when you praise other people, they feel like winners, and they'll go argue with someone else. So we have to learn to praise other people. But gosh darn it, that's so hard to do. That got to practice. Well, who am I going to practice on? Well, we've got the answer to that inside.
Practice and we've got to praise our inner opponent as well, I feel like. I get stuck in a gray area. Sorry to kind of interrupt with my spiel, Tessa, but sometimes I'll get stuck in a gray area of where I'm gladdening the mind and I'm really trying and I'm putting forth the effort and I'm mostly wholesome, but there's this part of me that's totally resisting it. And it feels like I'm saying stick in it to them, even if I'm not like consciously, like I feel like that part of me is convinced that that's what's happening. And I have to help that part of me out of that mindset that I am sticking it to them. Into the mindset that no, this is good for both of us, like, and praise them and make them feel like a winner as well.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the whole quality then, is to come out of this critical thinking and criticizing ourselves and finding something wrong and saying that we can't, and telling ourselves that we're a loser, and telling ourselves that our trauma is too big to handle. We can in fact start to say that, well, there now, yeah, you've been hurt. It's okay, you survived, and allow and give yourself credit. Start to praise yourself for whatever you can find that's praiseworthy. Praise whatever you can find that's praiseworthy. Instead of thinking about how bad you are, thinking about how good you are. An example of that would be someone who was on a diet. They hate their bodies, that's why they're on a diet. So when they're on the diet, they still look at the fat. They don't praise themselves for every tiny little thing that does change. And because they say, oh, you're still fat, you got to diet more, and then they get tired of the diet. And so they say, what the hell, and they'll quit the diet. And soon enough, they're right back to where they were. But if they could keep track of the little gains that they make and recognize that, yes, there are some changes to the body and that I can praise that. Look at that. Wow, if I can lose a little bit of fat right here, then maybe if I continue the diet, I'll lose a little fat right here. And so we just kind of stay on the diet. But as soon as we say, oh, you're still too fat, then that's the criticism that destroys the ability to be on a diet. Now, that one thing right there can be taken to drug addiction. It can be taken to alcohol. It can be taken to tobacco. It can be taken to any drug or any bad habit that we have. is that I can resist that cigarette one more minute and praise myself that at least 1 minute that I don't have to quit smoking. I can just quit right now doing it. The same thing is with arguing with people, is that I can stop arguing right now and praise myself. Wow, I really didn't have to say that, did I? And I didn't say it. As we start to praise ourselves every time that we can catch it. Wow, I got that one. This is the practice of the Samakasankapa, is to start congratulating yourself, to praise yourself for every little thing right that you do, because your only other choice is to criticize yourself for that which is left undone.
It's enjoying things from a place of praise. You're not just enjoying it because you're winning. You're enjoying it because of all the small wins that you'd normally ignore. You know, you're noticing that you're winning, not just the obvious stuff.
Right. And so some people would say, well, how can I praise myself for doing the first step when I still got 1,000 miles to go? The answer is that you did take the first step. If you hadn't taken that first step, then you would have 1,000 miles in one step to go and no progress at all. But now that you've made a step, you've made progress. And not only that, but you're going someplace. So the little steps do matter, but they matter only because we repeat them over and over and over and over and over again. So you can take a hot, dry bucket that's out in the sun and put it under a leaky faucet. And one drop at a time comes. And it, because the bucket is hot, all the water that's collecting at the bottom of the bucket, one drop at a time, gets evaporated. But we don't notice that in that evaporation, we're cooling the bucket, so that the next drop, a little bit of water, will remain. And then we want to say, well, yeah, but there's a little water in the bottom of the bucket, but it doesn't even cover the bottom of the bucket. Yes, but the water that you put in there plus the next drop will begin to cover the bottom of the bucket. And if we keep dropping one drop at a time, one little drop at a time, over and over and over again, it begins to build up. Until eventually, every drop that goes into that bucket is now building kind of a bubble, you know, about surface tension. And then one more drop, and all of a sudden that surface tension is broken because of the gravity of the thing, and you have a whole bunch of water running down the side of the bucket. Okay? Think of that way, then, is that's how you deal with other people. You can't give them a drop of water that you don't have. You have to completely fill yourself completely up with it, one little drop at a time, repeating over and over and over again, praise, 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 until you've got a whole bucket full of praise that just is overflowing with praise. So this is how we can practice, but we have to practice counting on one little step at a time, one little drop at a time, over and over and over and over and over again. And every new moment is a new opportunity to drop or not drop.
That's not enough.
I hear that critical thinking. I hear it. I hear that critical thought. It's not good enough. Yeah. I heard that specifically. It's not good enough. Well, that statement, not good enough, it can become a habit. It can be ground in. That we could put two drops in, pop, pop, at a time, and that's still not good enough. And then we can get the faucet to where it's actually drop, and that's still not enough. So we turn it a little bit more, and now we got a little steady flow, but it's really not enough. I mean, it's a really big bucket. So we turn it on full blast, and it's still not enough. Then we go get a fire hose, and we turn that on that poor bucket, and it's still not enough. Because we're in the habit of, it's not good enough, it's not enough. We need to change that thought someplace, and the easy place to change it is at the very beginning. when it's a tiny little thing and you say that tiny little thing is not good enough, and you can say, well, it's there. There it is. We've got it. Give yourself credit for it. At least you got one drop. You dropped one thing. And if you can do one drop, you can do another drop. And so when you keep telling yourself you can't do it or it's not good enough, that's just the old habit that you've had, Tess. You can change that.
Okay. I mean, I change it for like 5 seconds, but then it just comes back.
Yes. And you've got another 5 seconds, change it again. You don't have to go immediately into the feeling of defeat. You don't have to keep criticizing yourself that it's not enough. But in fact, five seconds of good feelings today is a whole lot better than yesterday with 24 solid hours of pity party and.
Yeah. No, that was 4 days. Panic. That was not 24 hours. That was 4 days.
Okay. All right. But now you've gotten 5 seconds of joy. You've gotten at least 5 seconds of praise. So you can do it. And so maybe next time you can do it another 5 seconds. All you have to do is remember to do it again. And remember to do it again. This is what the practice of meditation is all about. But it has to do with change, not just investigation. We have to remember to investigate. The Mahasi method and the Vajrayana's got that down. What they're missing is that you've got to change it. Even though you know that you're going to have to change it 1,000 times, but at least you know that if you can change it once, you can change it twice. And if you can change it twice, you can change it 3 times. And it doesn't matter whether it's going to take millions or not. You're starting on a roll. You can do it 4. You can do it 5. You can do it 6. You can do it. You can make change. This is why we have to practice.
Yeah.
Because it really is a whole lot of bad habits that you've developed.
Yeah.
You're criticizing nonstop. So it's time that you stop even for a little while. And then remember that you can stop again for a little while. And then you can remember again that you can stop for a little while. Then you can smile and say, hey, look, I stopped it already 3 times this hour. You start to praise yourself. Yeah. You can praise yourself for something little.
Yeah.
Yeah, for something little. Just a little bit. Just getting started. One little happy thought at a time. This is how we start to change. But like I said, everyone spends their whole life talking themselves into feeling bad with critical thoughts. It's not enough, not good enough. Now it's time to start talking yourself into feeling good. Start to praise yourself rather than criticizing yourself. To accept the darkness that you don't like in yourself. You don't like the criticism. You don't like the anxiety. You don't like the panic attack. And so now you can start to like that you have some control over the panic attack. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Better than no control at all. Just a little change, just a little dab will do you.
Yeah, it's not enough, but it's 1% better.
But I'm starting too late. I should have started this years ago.
Ah, I hear that unwholesome thought.
I know, me too.
You can start it now. If you continue to think I should have done it years ago for the next 3 years. And what? So now is the time to start doing it. Instead of pining over the last 3 years that you should have done it, you can do it now. I know that's crazy logic. So are you going to, for the next 10 years, say you should have done it years ago, or you're going to say, hot dog, I can start doing it right now?
I'm going to say I can start doing it right now.
Yeah, you can do it now. And then and you can do it the next time you remember that you can do it right now.
Yeah.
And if you start remembering often, remember that we can think of that bucket that's got one little drop. We can think of there's a lot of different buckets with a lot of different drops, but one of the buckets with one of the drops is sati. We have to keep remembering and keep remembering and keep remembering and keep remembering until it builds up. And then we have to keep remembering to change and start praise. So we start building that bucket up with praise as well as remember to praise. Remember to look. Remember to change. Remember to take the effort to change. And then remember to congratulate yourself for the little change that you did make. This is all part of the Eightfold Noble Path. I'm just really surprised by people who claim that they're good Buddhists and all that. They don't pay attention to the real teaching of the Buddha, which is the Eightfold Noble Path. Make a change. It's easy to do if you remember. And so if you can praise yourself, then you can start to praise other people. In fact, that's something that you can practice. Just go around thinking up good things to say about people and then go tell them.
Yeah, I have been more positive the last few weeks.
Did that 2 weeks include the 4 days of panic?
No, that wasn't positive then. Nope. Just hid in my apartment for 4 days, didn't go anywhere.
Ah, but you did a whole lot of self-criticism.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Thou shalt
not feel panic. Oh, I don't feel panic.
It's been lots of years of therapy. I shouldn't be panicking still.
Ah, but I've been eating food for the past 75 years. Why am I still fat?
But the therapy is supposed to decrease my anxiety.
No, it's supposed to pay money into the therapist's bank account. That's what it's for. This is a business. And in fact, psychotherapists, they really don't want to cure their clients. If they did cure the clients would leave. They even go so far with that this is kind of an inside joke. And that is that the therapist never really tells the client what's wrong with them. Because if they do, one of two things will happen. The person will either agree or disagree. If they agree, then they'll thank the therapist. Oh, thank you very much. Now I know what the problem is. And then they walk out and they never come back. You lose the client if you tell them what's happening and they agree. But if you tell somebody what's wrong with them and they don't agree, they'll say, who the hell do you think you are? And they'll storm out. So psychotherapists never do want to actually get down to what the issue is. They want to keep their client. Let the client figure it out for themselves. And the Buddha does the same thing. You got to do the work for yourself, but we're going to give you the correct tools to do it. And why do I give you the tools to do it free of charge? Because I got them free of charge. I was lucky. I actually ran across some people associated with Bhikkhu Buddhadasa that knew what was going on. And my gratitude for them is being passed on to you. And I'm generous with you to give you the tools you need to do what you wanted to have done in psychotherapy, but you didn't get it done. I tell you what, do you know Barbara Streisand? Ever heard of her? Okay. All right, the information that I have now is 30 years old. I do not know what has happened with Barbara Streisand for the past 30 years. But I do know that for the 25 years before that, she was with a shrink paying hundreds of dollars every session for 25 years. 25 years she was in psychotherapy, paying huge amounts of money. She never got anything out of it. Well, she wasn't there to get anything out of it. She was there to pay for therapy. At least that's how the therapist looked at it. She was a celebrity. She was rich. You don't want to let a big fish like that go. That is so deep into psychotherapy that that's the problem with it, is that it's a profession. Now, if the psychologists would actually all retire early or retire whatever and then give their sessions pro bono, they'd probably be better at it. But they don't have any investment. So you can just chalk all the psychotherapy that you had up to good experience. In fact, all that you learn through psychotherapy, you can begin to see how it actually fits in with the teachings of the Buddha.
I don't do.
But I was so unsuccessful at therapy that I wound up going through the whole program of becoming a therapist, going to the schools, and going to all the therapy sessions and the training courses and all that kind of stuff. And I finally quit because I knew it wasn't working. That in fact, I was at that level where all the PhDs and just about ready to go into the profession were all terrified because of insurance and lack of, everybody wants to be their own licensed psychotherapist in their own business. But setting up your own business is really long, slow. And so once the therapist builds up that clientele, they want to keep it. The only other possibility is to go to work for someone else, be a licensed social worker, this, you know, with too much education. So the whole profession has its own problems. So I would not expect for you to expect that that psychotherapy should have fixed these issues with you, because even with me, you're resisting fixing them. And the psychotherapist is going to let you away with resisting fixing them because he's better off if you keep coming back. With me, I'm wanting successes so that those successes, like the two of you, can then go out and be successes someplace else. And pretty soon we're beginning to get, let us call it a convoy.
Ripple effect.
We need a ripple effect. We need a convoy. We need a sangha in the West, like they have in Asia, where we mutually help each other because we know how the mind works. We can help each other.
Tessa.
Tessa, with all of the psychotherapy that you've had, why don't you put that now to good use?
I begin to see that
all the psychotherapy that you had and the teachings of the Buddha actually do fit directly together.
I don't do psychotherapy.
Pardon?
I don't do psychotherapy. I say therapy, but it's not psychotherapy. It's not talk therapy. It's body-focused therapy.
Is this a bioenergetics?
It's called somatic experiencing, but bioenergetics was an earlier version.
I know. I know all about Alexander Lowen.
Well, this is Peter Levine. And Kathy Kane. So it's newer
stuff.
I'm
a different generation than you are.
Yes. Talk therapy.
The new kids on the block, I don't know their names. I don't even want to know their names. But the actual students of Freud, I'm very interested in that crowd. And Alexander Lowen was a student of Freud. He was a student of Reich, actually. who was a student at Boyd.
Oh, is that by the bioenergetics guy?
Alexander Lowen.
Oh, cool.
And they used developmental and psychology for body types and all of that kind of stuff. But the point is that now we're going to start looking at what the mind is doing and making some changes. And one of the changes that you need to make is to stop thinking that you've already done everything that you needed to do, and now you're looking for the magic to come.
I'm looking for the magic. Where is it? I'm waiting for the magic. It should come. I put in a lot of work, including meditation, including yoga. So I should just have Kundalini happen and everything be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I know.
That's exactly what happens with the Mahasi method. And people will spend 100,000 hours, 30,000 hours, 10,000 hours expecting something new to change.
Yeah.
That they put in all of that meditation practice. Why don't they get some results out of it?
Yeah.
The answer is that they're not practicing what the Buddha taught, and they're not getting the results that the Buddha would recommend that you get when you are practicing.
Well, that's so lame. Why'd I do all that work? I should never have meditated.
Well, why do you care about the past? Why are you so
focused on the past? Because it was a lot of years and it happened and now I'm old.
Okay, well, do you want to spend the rest of your oldness being miserable like you've always been?
No.
Are you willing to set the past down and make a change?
I set the past down like a million times a day and it comes back a million and one.
No, that means that you're not really setting it down now, are you?
Well, I try to set it down a million times a day and then it goes away for 5 seconds and then comes back.
When you say a million times, I hear that is grandiosity.
A lot. I do it a lot.
There's not even a million seconds in a day.
I set it down a lot, and it still keeps coming back.
It feels like a lot.
Yeah.
That's where the word million came from. This is because you're trying to express a feeling.
Yeah.
And that feeling that you're expressing is a feeling of being defeated.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you see that you are intentionally wanting to have that feeling of defeated, as if, in fact, the whole show, this, excuse me, I gotta go into one of my pet sessions here. This is actually Christianity. I don't know whether you've ever been Christian or anyone in your family is Christian or not,
Yeah. But
the whole point about Christianity is that you've got to feel bad enough so that you can get mercy.
Yeah.
You've got to get grace.
It is
by the
that.
Grace of God, because I can't do it myself. Poor me. Okay. So this is part of the foundation of Christianity. Who are you to be good? Only God is good, they say. They've got this thing called original sin, and you're broken already. Okay. And I've heard several things that you said that indicate that someone in your life was either Christian, or they brought their Christianity into their ex-Christianity. So yeah. I don't know your background, but this stuff is really, really heavy duty.
Raised Catholic.
Catholic. Got ya. Okay, that's it. Right? That you're broken. Original sin. You need Jesus for your Savior and all of that. So when are you going to say, but I can't get any help from a therapist, and I can't get any help from a Jesus, and I can't get any help from a priest, and I can't get any help from a meditation. What I can do is start to change my own mind.
Yeah.
Because
I
none
need
of
to
those would
that.
Change the mind for me, but I've already had enough experience to know that I do have control over my own mind the way that a meditation session or a therapy session or a bioenergetics replacement session or a Jesus session, none of those have worked so far, but you do know that you can change your mind.
I feel afraid to take the reins. Like, scared to do that. I don't know why.
Afraid of failure, right.
Yeah.
You're afraid to take the rein, right? Okay.
Yeah.
That's why your buggy is just always winding up in a ditch. It's because you won't take the reins. You're expecting the plastic Jesus to rise on the dashboard of your buggy and to keep you right. This, I mean, we've got all the cliches. I've seen this so many times.
Yeah. I do feel and like I'm waiting for grace to hit. Because like all the times I've meditated, I've had a lot of experiences, and they all just hit seemingly randomly.
Okay. Well, that was because all of those meditation sessions, you weren't doing what the Buddha recommends, right noble effort to change. Mm-hmm. To remember to change from that criticism into the blame. And so you say, well, I put the criticism down and pick up the praise, but then the criticism comes back. And the answer to that is, yes, praise yourself for seeing that criticism and set it down again. And then praise yourself for setting it down again. And when the criticism comes back, instead of saying, oh, there it is again, I'm doomed with this criticism, you can take the reins again and say, right now, I can see that third or that 19th or that 24,000th criticism, and I can set it down the way that I did it before. Then you can praise yourself again, that you can do it again and again and again. I do admit that you've got a ground-in habit, a bad habit of criticizing yourself. I haven't met anybody who doesn't have a good, bad habit of it. Most everyone that I meet is somewhere like a 6 or 7. You're an 8. Big deal. Congratulate yourself. You're more critical of yourself than anybody that I've known.
Woo! I win. Yeah.
Now you're a winner. You don't have to feel defeated.
Yeah, you don't say that you don't feel defeated right now. You feel like you can win.
Yeah.
You can change.
Yeah.
Now, it would be possible for you to sit there all self-pity and poor me right through the entire conversations that you have with me. But every conversation, Tessa, that you've had with me, you brighten up and go down and brighten up and go down and brighten up and go down and brighten up and go down. So I know that you can brighten up. You do it often with me.
Yeah,
you just did it a moment ago.
Yeah, I do it all throughout the day, up and down, up and down, up and down.
Okay, so start practicing to have more up by seeing the down. Instead of when you see the down, you say, oh, I've got to go down now. We can say, aha, I caught you that time.
Okay.
Begin to start to play with the up and the down. Begin to see this up and down cycle that you've gotten yourself onto. And recognize this.
Yeah.
Good. You really can.
A lot today I saw my mind creating the dukkha, like as it was doing it before it actually finished, but I saw it starting and stopped it.
Good.
That happened a lot.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Congratulations. You can pat yourself on the back. Congratulations. You can see that cycle and you can do something about it.
Yeah.
You can praise yourself. You don't have to be criticism nonstop. That you've got a cycle going.
Yeah.
In fact, it's impossible for people to get just all criticism all the time. We've got to have that cycle going. If we don't, we will, in fact, clutch ourselves to death. We will walk right out into traffic because we don't care, because I feel so bad anyway. But no, you do care. We know that that's there. And so there is the up and the down, and the up and the down, you've gotten yourself on a cycle. There's a Pali word for it. The Buddha knew all about it. It's called samsara. And you have to see that samsara. You have to see that cycle that you're on. and congratulate yourself for seeing that cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've got a choice about it once you see it. If you don't see it, you have no choice.
Yeah.
And now you're beginning to see it. Well, guess what? Nobody likes it when they first see it. Nobody really wants to know how much trouble they make for themselves.
Yeah.
So the first part is the waking up means that you really have to recognize that, hey, you're beating your head against the wall. Mm-hmm. That you're actually causing yourself suffering. But instead of going into a pity party about it, we have to begin to take the attitude that, hey, all I need to do is see myself beating my head against the wall, and then I can stop doing it. I don't have to beat my head against the wall because I see myself beating my head against the wall.
I mean, I do see it a lot, and then it comes back in a few seconds. And then I see it again, and then it comes back in a few seconds. So I never get more.
That's the cycle. That's the cycle.
But it's a lot. It happens a million times a day.
Well, it happens every 3 or 5 seconds, but a million times is a little bit overdone.
But it, yeah, but
calculate that. How many seconds?
I only get respite for like a few seconds at a time. I only get joy for a few seconds at a time.
Okay. Well, that's better than nothing. That's better than nonstop criticism.
Yes.
True. It is.
Yes.
Give yourself credit for the little things.
Okay.
You really are on a cycle. In fact, it's not nearly as bad. You're sounding like that it's 99.99% criticism and only 0.01% of praise. But I think it's closer to only about 99% criticism and at least 1% praise in there.
Yeah. No, it's like 50-50 because I just go round and round and round all day.
Oh, okay. Well, at 50-50, that means that you're pretty close to 100%. And here we were down in the decimal points. Uh-huh. All right.
No, it's like 50 criticism because I catch it and then praise me for catching it and then criticize myself again and then catch it and praise me. So it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
Robert, have you noticed that in the past 30 seconds that she's gone from having no experience with meditation and getting nowhere into where she's already half done?
Yeah. That's a good
point. I didn't mean half done. I meant like
50. Yeah, you're half done now. You're praising yourself half the time. So now all you have to do is...
It's constantly back and forth, really a lot.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's the way that the mind works. That's why we are considered the cloud inside. And once you get your integration going, naturally you would choose to be integrated towards the praise, towards the wholesome. No one would choose, but they do it almost by accident, to choose 100% unwholesome. But those kind of people don't live very long. You're still alive, which means that you're up there. You're at least 10% praise. And now you're claiming 50%. I'll give you that. 50%. Yeah. Go ahead, Robert. You got your hand in the air.
Yeah. So an insight that Dhammarata gave me earlier was that the way I was relating to practice was not... really ideal. So I was relating to practice sort of like a war or like a battle or like I'm in a fight. So when I'm happy and I'm in that state of like praise and feeling good, that's when I'm winning. But when I'm anxious, I'm losing. And what he helped me to realize is that actually when anxiety is our friend, anxiety helps keep us alive. When you're anxious, you're still winning. And so do away with that whole idea of successful practice and unsuccessful practice of winning and losing, and then you don't have to play that game of when I win, I feel good, when I lose, I feel bad, and you can start to relate to yourself in a more harmonious way. than having like the two divisions that get more and more polarized, like I'm winning, I'm losing. Like, because I feel like if you start to have this like two parts of yourself, like they tend to, the more you, even if you're, even if you know, the more you try to win, the worse the losers feel, you know. It's like, I can't really explain it, but like,
no, I get because like when I went through my 4 days of panic, I was like, I suck, I'm a loser, because I'm not supposed to feel this way. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be happy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I but see, the panic is also a friend. So it's not that you're trying to win. This is just the way the insight came to me. I don't know if it's helped you, but it's not that you're trying to win and try to make someone else, which the panicky parts of you, lose, but it's that you're trying to make everyone win. So you're winning. The panicky parts of you are winning, the traumatized parts of you are winning. Oh. Everyone in your whole internal family is winning. And the internal family members will say that, like, no, I'm not winning. I'm losing if this part of me is winning, because they resist like the teaching and they resist practicing Anapanasati or whatever. But you want to try to explain to them, like, no, like, we're doing this. Not, this isn't for me. This is for everyone. This is for me, this okay. is for society, this is for like Gaia, this is for like it, all of it. That's how I would do it.
Yeah,
and all of the parts on the inside also.
No one's losing.
The parent, the adult, the child, the fear, the misery, the joy, the happiness. Let's bring these together.
Yeah.
Rather than hating one. If you choose one over the other, then now you're having a war on the inside.
Yeah, because I've been really mad at the critical parent lately.
Mm-hmm. Instead of nurturing with the critical parent.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're critical of the critical parent. I got that. I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Instead, we need to nurture the critical parent to soften it up.
Yeah.
That in fact, we respond to ourselves on the inside with our thoughts the same way that we respond to other people on the outside. This was something that Robert and I were talking about just before you joined the call. And that was that people are jealous of each other. And because they're jealous, we continue to compete. If we let the other side win and tell him you got me or everything is all right or things like that, and you can get the other guy to feel like a winner, he will stop trying to compete with you. So long as he feels like a loser, he's going to keep competing until he does win. If you let him win, then the war is over. If you can see that on the outside, then you can also see that that's true on the inside. That if you start making friends with the part that's on the inside, that the war will begin to get over. You'll finish that war by becoming friends.
I like that. I'm going to include all my different ego states in the process.
Yeah, that they're all useful. They're all necessary. In fact, that they have kept you alive. That if you didn't have these three ego states, if you had one of them locked off, you would probably either be in an emergency room or in the morgue, one or the other. That we do need all of these parts of the mind, but we need to bring them together and unify them rather than having them fight with each other.
Yeah.
We do need our fear. We do need it.
Yeah.
So when you say, I hate this panic attack, the fact is that the fear is useful. You don't want to get rid of it completely. You just want to manage it better.
Right.
This is why I use the Simon and Garfunkel song. It helps us out to understand. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Hello, panic. I've seen you before, and here you are again.
Yeah.
Be able to see this stuff, because if you see it with joy, then you know that you can change it. If you see it with regret and remorse, then you're the loser. If you're the one who comes friendly with this stuff, you're already in a winner's position. That's why all of this stuff ties in. I mean, we're just really talking about things that the whole package could be said in a one-liner. The entire teachings of the Buddha can be summed up in just one line. It's a one-liner. I've got a dozen of them. Don't worry, be happy. That's the one I like. Another one is dukkha, dukkha, nirodha. Okay. Goenka had the one of never mind, start again. Another one would be, well, it's all up to you. Your choice.
Yeah.
You could actually put it down to just one word, and that is the word method. I got a method. Or as the criminals and the police say, an MO. I've got a method. I got a method of operation. Or in our case, an MN, a method of no operation. So it's a very easy thing. Very easy to state as a one-liner. But it's really hard to put into practice because it's a habit that we're overcoming.
Yeah.
And so we have to keep practicing, keep practicing. It's all about repetition. No one learns to play the violin by simply picking up a violin and start playing music. They have to practice and practice and practice. Practice, and violin's really hard to practice because you've got to even practice getting the same note twice. But on a guitar, there's the frets. The frets make it easy. But on the string bass, there's no frets. On a violin, there's no frets. And so you have to practice getting that note in tune. You have to practice listening. And in fact, violin players are good listeners because they can't play their violin unless they're listening to what they're doing. That's one of the reasons why I really enjoy having musicians as students, is because they put in a lot of practice and know what it's about. Okay, so this is what you have to do, is to put on the strong determination, if you want to say it like that, that you can do it. You can practice. You have to remember to practice over and over and over and over again. What is that practice? To see those critical thoughts and to change them. Start praising yourself, to start integrating. Aha, I see you, is the way that the Buddha says. Aha, I see you panic. And you haven't been saying, aha, I see you panic. You're saying, ah, panic, panic.
Yeah, I've been panicking about the panic.
Panicking about the panic. Rather than being happy about the panic, or happy about being able to see that, oh, that's panic. Got it.
Yeah, I definitely don't feel like I'm friends with my fear.
Okay. Hello, darkness, my old friend. Try singing that song when the fear comes up. Oh, we've seen this before.
Okay.
And also, never mind, start again. Not just start again, but never mind.
Never mind.
I failed, and I've just been in and out of happiness and dissatisfaction for like the last couple of hours. Oh, well, never mind. Now we start again from scratch and we can feel good again. Oh, no, I just felt bad for so long. It's going to happen again. Never mind. Forget about it. We start again.
Never mind it. It's been 10 million times. In fact, 10 million, that takes 10 days.
Okay. Yeah.
It's going to be close to like 100K seconds in a day. To be up there, right?
It's thousands, if not millions. It's probably millions. Like, precisely,
like 100,000.
Very close to 18,000 seconds in 24 hours.
Is it that? Is it? God, I would have thought.
Well, you do know that 60 times 60 is 300, 3,600 times 24. Well, 24 is a quarter, and so you take the 36 is 9. Okay, so. 900 times 100 is 90,000.
Oh, doing math to make us feel bad.
Yeah, I see. I can do it in my head. Calculated the number of seconds in 24 hours, about 90,000. Okay, it's not a million.
I can think really fast, though.
Okay. About a tenth of a second for a thought moment, but a panic attack takes a whole lot of them.
Yeah.
A whole lot of thought moments to put that much adrenaline in the system.
Yeah.
We have to really grind that one up to get up to the level of panic.
Yeah.
So in any case, this is how we're going to practice is to get back to being real, to stop being grandiose, to check that out too, to recognize that the way that I feel can be expressed correctly. It doesn't have to be expressed with grandiosity. But that's part of the criticism. Oh, you always do it that way. Where in fact, now you're saying, oh, well, no, we're on a cycle now, 50-50, 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, my hands are spinning far faster than the mind spins in that way, that the mind doesn't spin quite that fast. But you can change it. You can see that cycle. Once you see that cycle, then you can choose where you want to be on it, or the better choice is to just step off. Oh, I don't need any of that.
Yeah.
So let's finish now. I think that this is a good point that we've gotten it. That you got it up to 50%. Wow, what an improvement. I'm impressed.
Yeah, today was pretty good.
All right. We got any closing remarks? Robert, thanks so much for your help today. This has been marvelous. You're quite a winner there.
Thank you.
Go give that sense of winning to the guy who was competing with you.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea.
Yeah.
And you, Tessa, give yourself permission to be okay. That you're fine already.
Okay.
Nourish yourself. Praise yourself. And when you see that criticism, there he goes again. I caught that one.
Yeah. Okay.
Start to see that cycling. Guys, this has been really great. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Thank you, Damrata. Thank you, Tessa. It's lovely.
Thanks, both of you.
See ya. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.